Welcome to a special NFL podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. Today, we'll be covering some major NFL storylines, as well as analyze the Bears and their performance in Game 3 of the preseason. Plus, later on in the show, we'll have an extremely special guest on, and it'll be an interview that you won't want to miss. It's quite a busy day here at Sports Talk Chicago, and I'm so glad that you're here joining us. Before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at JohnZacks and on Twitter at JohnZSports. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. The Thunderbolts' last game of the season is this Saturday, August 25th. Purchase tickets right now at 708-489-BALL. That's 708-489-2255 to purchase tickets for their last home game of the 2018 season. To start today's show, I have a question to ask, and there's no simple answer. If you had to choose between Teddy Bridgewater, Josh McCown, and Sam Darnold, who would you pick? And who do you think would suit the Jets better come week one of the 2018 NFL season? See, I told you, quite a loaded question, because right now all three of those guys are performing well in the preseason, and that's a revelation that's come out of left field for the Jets. Look, before the season started, the Jets had it all planned out. They knew what they were going to do. They had Josh McCown as their starter, Sam Darnold as their backup, and then Teddy Bridgewater would work his way in once he recovered fully from his ACL tear. But now, Bridgewater's back and doing well in the preseason. His performance has made the Jets second-guess themselves. Now they genuinely don't know who's going to start come week one. Now, if it were up to me, I'd choose between Sam Darnold and Josh McCown and table Teddy Bridgewater for a minute. We'll get back to him, though. Now, McCown last year was the starter, and although he led the team to a 5-8 record, he did amazing. He tied a career-high 13 starts while setting career highs in passing yards and touchdown passes. McCown is most familiar with this offense. He succeeded. He thrived under it last year. Why make the switch when you have Sam Darnold in your back pocket? Let Darnold develop, have McCown play for the most or part of this year, then have Darnold come in and get his feet wet. But don't sit McCown right away, especially after the year he put up last season. In my opinion, it'd be absurd of the Jets to quote-unquote punish McCown by sitting him, especially after the year he had. It'd make no sense to rush Darnold out onto the field when you have a perfectly good, capable quarterback right there to start. Remember, though, Darnold himself hasn't done that bad so far in the preseason. In his first game, he went 13 of 18 for 96 yards and one touchdown. Game 2, he did drop off a bit in his performance, but he's definitely shown some glimpses of just how good he can be. I'm not worried about Darnold and his potential here in the NFL. I feel like that he'll do just fine as long as he gets enough time to develop and get his feet wet, like I mentioned. Now let's get back to Teddy Bridgewater, the NFL's most overrated quarterback, as I like to call him, because although he's made a Pro Bowl, I am still trying to understand why people are making such a big deal about him. Now Bridgewater, before his injury, was an okay quarterback, and although people try to paint him as some savior for the Vikings, he really didn't do much. In his rookie season, his passer rating was 85.2 with 14 touchdowns and 12 picks. The year after, the year in which the Vikings went 11-5, Bridgewater was almost a non-factor. He passed for 3,200 yards, had 14 touchdowns and 9 interceptions, and his passer rating stayed quite stagnant. You tell me how he's been so influential, as people like to say, because I just don't see it. To further prove my point, that year that the Vikings made the playoffs and went 11-5 was the year that Adrian Peterson rushed for nearly 1,500 yards. It was because of him that the Vikings went so far, and it had nothing to do with Teddy Bridgewater and his so-called successes in the pocket. For some reason, one way or another, however, no one seems to make that connection. So there you go, I just made it for you. Because it baffles me that Teddy Bridgewater's getting all of this credit for doing nothing. Adrian Peterson was the star of that team, and yet you know what his reward is? Trying out for the Redskins in 2018 because no one is willing to sign him. Life's unfair. The NFL is unfair. I get it. But when a guy is portrayed as some savior and really isn't, there's a problem there. Now, fast forwarding to this preseason, Teddy Bridgewater is doing good. He went 10 of 15 for 127 yards with one touchdown and one interception in the Jets' preseason game against the Redskins. And in week one, Bridgewater went 7 of 8 with 85 yards. So yes, he's done pretty well in his first two games. Yet the attention that he's receiving is completely unwarranted. I mean, here's a tweet from Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network. Quote, always interesting how opinions can change after you study the tape versus watching on TV. I thought Teddy Bridgewater played well last night while watching live. I was wrong. He played outstanding. You really want to sit here and claim that he played outstanding? You know what? That's okay, I guess. All he did was play against the second and third strings of the frickin' Washington Redskins all night. Of course he played well. Look, I'm just never going to understand why there's so much hype around a player who has done so little in the NFL. What the Jets should truly do is trade Bridgewater. He's in the news, he's hyped up so much, trade him for some draft picks, you'll still have McCown and Darnold, and you'll win out. Do it now before eventually his stock goes down. But anyways, I digress. If it were up to me, I'd choose Josh McCown to be the starter come week one and have Sam Darnold as the backup. Have McCown play and let Darnold get used to things on an NFL roster before introducing him to an NFL game later in the 2018 season. Well, before we move to today's special guest, let's talk about the Chicago Bears and their current preseason outlook. Luckily for the Bears, Roquan Smith has now been signed, so that holdout and that off-the-field distraction is now complete, and now we can focus on football as the 2018 regular season gets underway quite soon. The top storyline coming out of camp, however, is Mitchell Trubisky and his performance so far in the preseason because it hasn't been good. In the Bears' recent win over the Broncos, Trubisky went 9 of 14 for 90 passing yards, one touchdown, and one interception. Sure, you could chalk up his bad performance to still learning the Nagy offense, or bad receivers, or playing with new players. But how about we explore this less talked about issue? Maybe the problem isn't Nagy, or the new offense, or the new players. Maybe the problem is Mitchell Trubisky himself. Yep, I said it, and I'm not afraid to say it any longer, because it's the plain truth. Say whatever you want about Trubisky last season, but the plain truth is he didn't do well. 7 touchdowns and 7 picks, a completion percentage under 60%, barely throwing for 2,000 yards, and a passer rating under 80. There's not one encouraging thing that I can pull out of any of those numbers that I just read you. And now in his first preseason game, he performs like he did? That's not a good sign for the Bears and their supposed franchise quarterback. And what makes this so frustrating for me is that I said back when the draft took place, the Bears rushed themselves. They were under so much pressure from fans, especially after withstanding the Jay Cutler era, to go out and get a quarterback. So instead of waiting 1 year, they draft Trubisky. They don't draft Deshaun Watson even in that same year. And in this past season, there were so many surefire quarterbacks, some of which who could be ready come the start of the season. Yet once again, because the Bears were rushed, because they made the wrong decision, because they drafted in the wrong year, mind you, they're stuck with Mitchell Trubisky. And that's something I'm never going to forget. The Bears, under the direction of Ryan Pace, have actually not done that well when it comes to draft it. I mean, Kevin White was a horrible choice, and now the Bears are stuck with a quarterback who truly does not embody the future of this team. In all actuality, the Bears aren't in that good of a position right now, whether you like it or not. Sure, you could sit here and claim that Trubisky still needs time to learn the Nagy offense, but either way, I just don't feel that he is fit for this team and that he's fit to be a star NFL quarterback. And with that, it's time for our special guest. He began his NFL career in 2003, getting selected 35th overall by the Chicago Bears. In 2006, he was the team's leading tackler amongst defensive backs, en route to making an appearance in Super Bowl 41. By 2011, he had made his first of two Pro Bowl teams, and in 2013, he was named the Walter Payton Man of the Year. Today, he's the founder of the Cornerstone Foundation, providing opportunities and resources to those in need. Please welcome Charles Peanut Tillman to the show. Charles, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me. I can't complain.
You know, I gotta ask, what's the story behind your nickname? Who gave it to you, and what were your thoughts on it?
My aunt Renee, my dad's oldest sister, she gave me the nickname. I was just a little small baby once I came out of the womb, and she looked over and just said, "Hey, he looks like a little peanut." And I've just had the nickname ever since.
Well, ironically enough, your nickname is still used today in the context of the peanut punch. Did you ever see this becoming so well known?
Honestly, no. I thought it was just a family nickname, and from that point on, fans got a hold of it, and they ran with it.
Right. I mean, it's almost like a common football term now. And I know that in the Bears' preseason game against Denver, Cravon LeBlanc forced a fumble, and the announcing team called it the peanut punch. This kind of immortalizes you in a way. What are your thoughts on that?
You know what? It's pretty good to leave your mark on the game. I didn't think that I would get credit for all the forced fumbles that are out there, or a lot of the forced fumbles that are out there. But I guess I did something all right. I did something good. If you know, announcers, when two other teams are playing and I'm retired, and they still refer to it as the peanut punch. So I guess I did something all right.
Speaking of being immortalized, Brian Urlacher, your former teammate, recently got inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. How deserving is Brian of this honor?
He's extremely deserving. He was a guy who went out there and did everything the right way. And if you notice, or if you recall in his Hall of Fame interview, he wanted to be best known for being a good teammate. Not the best player on the field, not the best tackler, not the guy with the most interceptions. He specifically said, "I just want my guys to remember me as a good teammate." And truly, that's what I will remember him for. Although he had all the celebrity and spotlight and attention on him, he always made, and I say always, that's a strong word, but he always made you feel like you were the number one celebrity or you were the star in the room. That's just the kind of guy Brian is.
Do you have a favorite memory or story involving you and Brian?
Yeah, my favorite memory of him on the field is the 2006 game against Arizona when he just was a madman, and he was in a zone, and he had, 20-something tackles. Defense, we played lights out that game, and we came back to win the game 24, 23, 21, 24, something kind of, I don't remember, scrub, but it was something like that.
You know, speaking of the Hall of Fame, you yourself had an amazing NFL career. Do you see yourself making it in someday?
God willing, yeah. I mean, it'd be nice to. I think that's the ultimate fraternity. There's only 318 guys, and yeah, that'd be cool if I ever got the opportunity to get in there.
Charles Tillman is here on Sports Talk Chicago, and Charles, going back to your playing career, starting in your first year at Louisiana Lafayette, you had to make quite a change, because that year you became a cornerback after playing wide receiver throughout your high school career. Why did this happen, and how'd you adjust to the position change?
I don't think the position was that hard to adjust to. I played a little bit of defense or DB. I played safety in high school for 2 years. Again, it wasn't that hard in high school. You know, a lot of guys play offense and defense. Going to college, strictly defense. It was fun. Got to hit people. I think that's better than catching the football. It really wasn't a hard transition for me. I think I adjusted well. And then once I got to the league, you know, it was just another adjustment. A lot of people don't know this, but when the Bears drafted me in 03, I didn't know if I was going to play safety or corner. So I think I was just walking the halls, and Dick Duran goes, yeah, we're going to try you out at corner first. If that doesn't work, then we're going to put you in safety. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll just play corner then. So then I just made the adjustment and just figured, all right, I'm a corner now. And 13 years later, I had a pretty good career.
So after you got drafted by the Bears and played there for a few seasons, 2006 happened, and you mentioned that amazing Monday night comeback and the Super Bowl 41 appearance later in that season. What stood out to you most about that year?
Brotherhood. Our locker room. We had guys playing for one another, and there wasn't one selfish player on that team. And it's no fluke, it's no accident why we were so good that year. We had a great team. Great locker room, great coaches from the top down. You know, it wasn't just the players, but equipment staff, trainers, community relations, media relations, scouting department, just everybody. It was just, we were all in sync. And I think when you see teams, the two teams that make it to the Super Bowl, if you were to interview those guys, they would all say the same thing. It's just the brotherhood, and they had a really good locker room. That's key, having a great locker room.
You know, mentioning the Super Bowl that year, I wanted to get your take on how the game went. I mean, Devin Hester starting it all off with that big touchdown return. But in the end, you guys succumbed to the greatness of Peyton Manning. How difficult was it for you personally to get over that Super Bowl loss?
Well, I can tell you how it went. It started off good and it ended bad. You know what? Peyton is a hell of a player, but I still wish I would have won, you know. I still think we had a better team, but, you know, that day they were the better team and they deserved to win. Peyton Manning, he did his thing. You know, he went out there and he played good. But not only him, I can't give – Peyton doesn't get all the credit, though. Kelvin Hayden, you know, he had a phenomenal game, the pick six. I think that kind of sealed the deal for them to win that game. But, yeah, it was a tough loss, tough one to get over.
And then playing in Carolina in 2015, you got a chance to win it all once again, but it didn't happen. As a player, is that your number one regret, not being able to win a Super Bowl after playing in two of them?
Yeah, I think that's my number one regret. I lost two Super Bowls, and yeah, it sucks. You can probably hear it in my voice.
Well, following that season, you announced your retirement from the game. And how difficult was it for you to step away and realize that, you know what, my career is over, it's time to move on to other things?
It's definitely difficult. I've been playing football since I was in the 8th grade, and to do one thing for so long and to finally step away from it, it takes a minute to really, like, wow, I'm done playing. Okay, life goes on. You know, football doesn't define who I am. I play football, but I'm so much more than football. You know, I have more interests, more desires. I'm capable of more than hitting a person or punching out fumbles. You know, I'm more things. I have more qualifications, and I have more talents than just that.
Well, definitely. I mean, you run the Cornerstone Foundation, and I know that there's a big event coming up on September 25th that features great prizes and competition in laser tag, whirly ball, and even bowling. What's this event all about?
So it's a fundraiser, and it's kind of like our, we call it a triathlon. You know, we'll have a little whirly ball, a little laser tag, and some bowling. And the winner, who has the highest score, they'll go to a game with us in a suite. I think we play the Bears play the Lions sometime in November. So it's a good treat, man. It's gonna be a real good time, and everybody should come out, because I'm telling you, it's gonna be a blast. We gonna get it in.
And also, I know on October 21st, people will have the opportunity to tailgate with you before the Bears take on the Patriots. I mean, personally speaking, this is such a great opportunity. How can people become a part of the action?
Yeah, so if you go to charlestillman.org, you can find out all the information on the Cornerstone website, charlestillman.org, all one word. Or you can follow me at Peanut Tillman on Twitter and Instagram. I'm constantly making posts and updates for all you social media gurus out there.
Well, going to the NFL today, I wanted to get your thoughts on the current national anthem protest. What are your thoughts on the policy, and then how do you think the league has handled the situation? Would you say poorly or very well?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part. You said about the national anthem protest?
Correct, yes. About the protests,
yeah.
What are your thoughts on them?
Hey, man, this is the United States of America. Freedom of speech, they do it in a... They're protesting for the social injustice of African-American people. And I feel like some people think it's cruel, it's disrespectful. Now, the thing I try to educate and tell people, Nate Boyer, who was a former Green Beret, spoke with Colin Kaepernick, and Colin Kaepernick made the, if you want to call it an adjustment, instead of sitting down, which I think is a little bit offensive, instead of sitting down, he took a knee. And I believe Nate Boyer said, you know, when we lose a brother at wartime or in wartime, you know, we take a knee to honor him. So he takes the knee instead of sitting down. And I think people are missing the message at some point in time. He's publicly said this numerous times that he respects his country. He respects the flag and what our veterans do. He's just trying to make people more aware and alert of how African-American people are being treated in this country, specifically with law enforcement officers. And he's doing it in a very peaceful way. And he's a man of his word. You know, he's donated a couple of $100,000. And he's got a lot of courage, in my opinion, because I feel, because of his protest, he hasn't been able to play in the league anymore. Teams aren't willing to pick him up because the weight and baggage he carries with the whole national anthem, and teams don't want that. You know, they feel like it'll be a distraction. So, I mean, I might protest a little differently, but I respect what he's doing because he's lost so much. He's lost money, he's lost sponsorships, he's lost his career. But now I think Colin Kaepernick has found a new side of himself. I think he's found a new calling in his life. And I think he's doing some amazing things, you know, in these communities that he's raising money for and he's helping.
You know, I talked to Braylon Edwards a few weeks ago, the former NFL wide receiver, and he told me that the main reason why these protests are happening is because these players aren't receiving support, you know, from owners or from higher-ups. Do you think that's a main reason why these problems are still continuing today?
I don't think it has anything to do with the owners. I think it's just, again, it's an American thing. I think too much in this time right now, there's so much divide and, you know, truly, I really think the message behind the protest is, we're all human. Treat us like we're human. Let's love one another. Let's all collectively get along as one. And we, as Americans, can be better about how we are treating each other, whether you're black, white, Hispanic, whatever. We just need to love each other and treat each other, you know, like human beings.
And on a final note, I wanted to go back to 2006 before a primetime game against the New York Giants. Now, at the time, Plaxico Burress said that the Bears' secondary was very beatable. Yet you responded by holding him to only 11 receiving yards while intercepting a pass. Did Burress speak too soon?
Yeah. When you play a team and you talk about a player or specific positions, you put that target on your back. And he put a target on his back that game, and he was the motivation, not just from me, but our entire secondary slash our head coach, our head DB coach, Steve Wilks, which is now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, which, in fact, he and his defense had 8 turnovers the other night when they played the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm happy for Steve Wilks. He's doing some good things. And under his reign, I had some of my best seasons.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, what an honor it was to have Charles Tillman himself on today's show. We touched on so many subjects, including his playing career, the Cornerstone Foundation, and the NFL's National Anthem Protest. Personally, I had a great time with Charles today, and I hope you enjoyed that interview. Before we end today's show, it's now time for the Announcer's Call of the Day segment. With Peanut Tillman today, we talked about that infamous Monday Night Football game against the Cardinals. Let's listen to Jeff Joniak call Tillman's biggest play of the night, a forced fumble return for a touchdown.
10 for Leinart and the Cardinals. From the 41, he takes the snap again. The hand up, Edgerrin James stuck up the middle by Alphonso Boone. Ball's out, and it's picked up by the Bears. Running it, Tillman, 20, 15, 10, 5. Are you kidding me? Touchdown. Defensive touchdown, number 2. Peanut Tillman, 40 yards. 5 minutes to play, and the Bears are back in this thing.
A great call there by Jeff Joniak, and what a play by Charles Tillman. Man, I have to say, this is a guy who should get more Hall of Fame consideration. I mean, for crying out loud, he has a play named after him, the Peanut Punch. That definitely deserves some merit, and I hope Tillman can get some more consideration in the future. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Chi-Talk Sports and hit me up personally at Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can enter in your email on the subscription box on the homepage. Then, click the confirmation link, and from there, you'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And finally, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Feel free to subscribe and leave a 5-star rating or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you again for listening to today's show, and have a great day.